Albrightowitz, July 2nd, Tanya.
I'm recording this one. So it's recording, right?
Yeah, but I can record this one. This way you'll save the disk space for the other show.
Okay.
Right.
That's fine.
Thank you very much.
Just wanted to make sure I know how to do it. Okay. You're actually in Mem Vav. Remember that this whole part of the Tanya, again, it's a great length. The issue becomes that every person, every Jew, has a great hidden and burning love for God that is welling up within his soul. And as a result, therefore, when we ask the question, how does one come to love God? The question is not, how do you develop a love for Hashem? That love is already there. But the question is, how do you access it? How do you become aware of it? How do you come in contact with it? How do you release it from the recesses of your being? And there were different ways of doing it. Perek Mem Vav, which we're in the middle of, essentially says, and this is described as Derech Yashar Lifnei Ish, this is the straight path, Shavel L'chol Nefesh, that is equally accessible to everybody, V'karayv Hadavar Ma'od Ma'od, it is very near. So of all the pathways, this is said to be the easiest and most accessible, and this is based on the Pasuk in Mishle, just by way of quick review, which says, Kamayim Hapanim El Panim, as water reflects the face that you show the water, so the heart of one human being reflects that which is shown it. You smile at the water, you get back a smiling face, you frown at the water, you get back an angry face. So too, human beings, even in human relationships, we have almost an invisible radar that picks up the vibrations that we receive from others. When we relate to others with tremendous love, they will feel love for us in turn. So the Alter Rebbe says, it's a kal v'chomer, that if indeed a human being shows me great love, I feel love for them. When I sense in my life the tremendous love that Hashem has for me in giving me life and giving us all of the brachos that He gives us, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Melech Malchei Amlochim, who descends from the holiest places in which there are infinite numbers of angels that worship Him, and Hashem comes into the dirt and into the filth and into the mundane nature of this world to be with us, to treat us, to give us hatava, to give us chesed, out of His love for us. So how much more so would that awaken a love within our soul to be connected to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, based on the idea of Kamayim Haponim Oponim. And he goes into a long arichas in which he describes, this is part of the meditation really, in which he describes a kind of visualization of the Pamalya Shalmala, the heavenly court, in which you think about, in using a human relationship, you think about a Melech Basar Vadam who comes from the highest, most elevated places, and he goes to the bum in the street to lift him up and take care of him. How much love will the derelict feel for the Melech, and therefore how much love we should feel for our country. By the way, I never made this mention. I saw linguistically the term Pamalya Shalmala is coming from the word family. And we translate heavenly court, but Pamalya is in Latin. Family, exactly. The heavenly family is actually the more accurate translation. So now we're just in the middle of it. And he says, this is on page 130. He's just describing, Kulam Shayalem, all of the angels in heaven, ask, Aye Makom Kavodo, this is taken from the Kedusha, where is the place of God's glory? That's a rhetorical question, because God's glory is not limited to any place. The onin, and the only answer is, mole kala aretz kavoda. The earth is filled with his glory, but heim Yisrael amon. So again, sometimes derech agav, the Baal HaTanya offers very interesting interpretations of side points. You know, what do we say? We say, kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzavakos, molo chala aretz kavodo. The whole earth is filled with his glory. Now, if you think about that, that pasuk is a bit problematical. The earth is filled with his glory? Why only the earth? I mean, the universe, right? By saying Hashem's glory fills the whole earth, that is a limitation. So you see the Baal HaTanya sneaks in three words, a little interpretation there. He says, Haim Yisrael Amo, the glory of God is the Jewish people. So Mole Kol Ha'aretz Kavodo, the earth is filled with Jews. Kind of like the anti-Semites, some might say. Now, I mean, in America, we're not that significant, but you know, there are Jews everywhere, so to speak, in every corner of the world. I remember seeing an advertisement for Rabbi Franz Shiurim, you know, Rabbi Friend of Mary Israel, an old chavrusa of mine. But the advertising made the point that Rabbi Franz Shiurim are listened to in every continent in the world. Apparently, somebody in Antarctica, you know, listens to Rabbi Franz tapes, you know. So there are Jews everywhere. And in fact, mystically, there is a great spiritual significance in Golos, that there should be a Jew in every corner of the world to bring Kedusha to that particular corner. And there really cannot be a kibbutz Golias till the Golos is so complete that there's every place in the world. So Chabad, in that sense, are fulfilling a good mission there by putting themselves everywhere they could put people, because there are hidden sparks of holiness everywhere. And it's not just a question of kirov rechokim. I mean, there is, of course, taking the non-religious and making them religious, but there's more of an existential idea that even if there were no Jews there at all, there should be a Jew there to bring the holiness into reality. So,
they published this book in every...
That's right. They published the Tanya in Saudi Arabia? I didn't know that. And I assume there wasn't this a widespread distribution.
No. None of it. The Indian was to have it published in all parts of the world, not necessarily to sell it.
Right.
Idea from the Tanya Milorets Kavoda?
I'm not aware of it anywhere. I mean, you know, again, I don't know. I mean, but this
he brings it down.
But you see, in the middle here, just you wouldn't even notice that he's actually saying an explanation. Malo chal aretz kavodo, heim Yisrael amo.
What about what happens if kibbutz Golias? It won't be kol aretz anymore, unless Yisrael is called
kol aretz. Well, that's one explanation. The other explanation is that once the Jews have brought kedusha into the world, into every corner of the world, so that Kedusha stays, and then they can leave. They've done their job. So he says, and this is God's glory. God's glory is Yisrael Amo. Ki hi niyacha kadosh baruch hu. Hashem has left aside the Elyonim, the upper worlds, the Tachtonim, the lower worlds. V'lo bachar b'kulam. He did not choose any of them. Ki im b'Yisrael Amo. It is the Jewish people that he chose to be his glory in the universe. Haitziam in Mitzrayim, he took them out of Egypt. Ervas Haaretz, the nakedness of the land. Again, one of the biblical names for Mitzrayim is Ervas Haaretz, because it was promiscuous, it was immoral. Makom Hazuam of Atuma, the place of spiritual filth and impurity. And Lo Al Yidei Malach, Ret HaGadah says, it was Hashem that did it, it was not through angels or intermediary forces. El Kadosh Baruch Hu B'Chvado V'Yatzmo, Yarad L'Shem, as the Pasuk says, V'Eired L'Hatzila. Right, Hashem says, I myself will go down. K'dei L'Karva Melev, in order to draw the Jewish people near to him, bikira v'yichud amiti, in a true closeness and a true yichud. Again, yichud is a loaded word, really. It's a controversial word a little bit, because although we commonly use it in Kabbalah, yichud literally means to unify yourself with God. And on some level, which we don't fully understand, I don't fully understand certainly at all, it actually means you become godlike. You become united with God. Behis kashrus hanefesh mamish. The souls unite. Bevechinas neshikin peh lepeh. It is as if the mouths kiss. Ledaber devar Hashem zu halacha. So he's going to give physical metaphors here. He says, God's words are the Torah. And when I say God's words of the Torah, our mouths are kissing, which means our spirits are being united through neshika, because neshika is mouth to mouth. The Devar Hashem and my Dibor unite in the study of Torah. That is the Bechina of Chibor. That is called neshika. And that in turn is the spirit touches the spirit. That is Hasogas HaTorah, the Adias Ritzonah. So he's saying that when I speak words of Torah and I unite myself to God's speech, that is neshika, that is like kissing. When I think about the Torah and I try to understand it, I'm connecting my mind with God's mind. That is Isdapkus Rucha Barucha, the spirit and the spirit. And what is hugging? Hugging is when I do mitzvahs. I do mitzvahs with my physical body. I am uniting myself to the concretization of God's will in the physical. And because the Zohar says, he actually says, again, these are metaphors, but they're taken to make a very dramatic point. The 248 positive commandments are described as the Evorin Demalka, the 248 limbs of the Almighty. And therefore, when I do mitzvos, I am connecting my Ramach Evorim to this expression of the 248 Evorim Kavyochol of the Melech, and that is called Chibuk. So he says, Limud HaTorah and doing mitzvahs is Chibuk V'nishuk, is hugging, is kissing, and is the connection of the spirit to the spirit.
How is this different from the nefesh elokit or neshama, that we have a behamtit and elokit? Is the nefesh elokit anything to do with this kind of chibur?
Well, eventually what's going to happen is, as you become mechubar, so even the animal soul will get elevated and connected as well. But this initial point of connection is to connect the godly soul to the light, the Or Ein Sof. And when that is connected, that eventually will transform even the animal soul there as well. Now then he says, V'derech klal nechlokin l'sholosh b'chinas, yamin usmol v'yemtza, shehem chesed din rachamim, train drangu. Again, I'll be the first to admit that this is a terminology that perhaps we can translate and not fully understand. All of us know the statement of Chazal, the well-known statement, that there are 248 positive commandments, and that corresponds with the limbs in the body, the bones in the body, which, by the way, women have fewer than that. That's why for a mishaberich, for a male chola, we say Hashem should send a refuah shlema l'ramach evorav, the 248 bones. For a woman, we say l'chol evareha, because we don't have an exact count. And the 365 negative commandments, the Medrash gives a few different explanations. One explanation is it corresponds to the sinews or the ligaments, as it were, the connective tissue. Others say it corresponds to the solar year, the Shnas HaChama, as it were. Although you wonder why we use the Shnas HaChama. Normally a Jewish year is a lunar year, which is a 354 or 55 days. But the Zohar makes the striking idea that since the Torah is a representation, as it were, a concretization of the essence of Hashem, the Ramach Evarim of the Mitzvah Saseh are described somehow as a concretization of Hashem's Evarim. Now, Hashem does not have Evarim in a literal sense. Hashem does not have a body. That's very, very obvious. But whatever spiritual force is represented by Evarim, the Ramach Evarim are the Evarim de Malka. And then he takes this even further and he says that we know that positive commandments can express different aspects of our relationship to God, the right, the yamin, normally represents chesed, pure kindness and benevolence. The left represents pure judgment and strictness. And the middle, which is a synthesis between chesed and din, is called rachamim, because real mercy properly synthesizes pure giving with pure strictness. And the Zohar says that too represents the body, because the right arm, right when you have your two arms hang from your torso. So therefore, the right arm is the midah of chesed, and the left arm is the midah of din, and the rachamim is the guf. And therefore, in the Ramach mitzvahs, we have these three dimensions as well. There are certain mitzvahs that are expressions of rachamim, give tzedakah to the poor, chesed. There are certain mitzvahs that are gevura, like eradicating Amalek or whatever it is, and then there are other mitzvahs that teach us a sense of harmonization and balance in various ways. Again, we're not given a precise listing of that, but you could say something like tefillin to teach us how to focus our thoughts in the proper direction, not leaning in one extreme or another extreme. Again, the idea is that somehow the Ramach mitzvos are symbolic of the right and left arms and the torso, and when I engage my body in that, that is a kind of chibuk, a kind of embrace of the divine on that physical level. By the way, this idea that the left is din and the right is chesed, the Gemara actually uses that expression. It says, "Liolam tehei yamin mikareves u'smol docha." Again, with apologies to lefties, this imagery is assuming that the dominant, stronger hand is right. That's our assumption. If you're a lefty, you just switch it around. But it says that the dominant approach that one should have in life, the stronger approach, should always be loving kindness. And the need for discipline and boundaries is very important, but that should always be with the left hand and not with the right hand. And specifically, the Gemara says it, with the raising of children and the relationship of a Rebbe to a Talmud, that the right should be the hand that draws near and the left should be the hand that pushes away when necessary. Psychologists, I think, recommend. I've seen from psychologists who write books on child raising, one woman recommended that parents should actually try to aim, obviously these are not numbers set in stone, but they should aim for a 70-30 ratio, that 70% of their interactions with their children, they should strive to be positive and try to keep negative criticism down to 30. Now, if somebody would follow us around with a tape recorder, we might have a reversal of that ratio, because sometimes the tendency of all of us is that when things are going well, we don't necessarily comment. We intervene when there are problems without necessarily affirming people when they're doing a good job and not rocking the boat and the like. But fascinatingly enough, the story that the Gemara gives to illustrate that it's not good to be too strong on the discipline. And this is censored in our Gemara, but it's a story that is said to involve Yeshua, Jesus, right? Yashka. It's a big problem chronologically because it gives a story of Yashka with a Tana whose name was Rav Yeshua ben Parachia. Rav Yeshua ben Parachia was a very early Tana, as mentioned in Pirkei Avos. The problem is, and there's a story I'll tell you in a moment about Yeshua ben Parachia and his relationship with his disciple Yeshua, whose also name was Yeshua. The problem is Yeshua ben Parachia lived during the time of the Chashmonaim, the Malchei Chashmonai, and that was around over 100 years before the birth of Jesus, as we tend to think. So it's kind of difficult, as it were, to actually say that this is the Yashka of Nazareth who had an encounter with Yeshua ben Parachia, simply because the dates don't mix very well. So, we don't know. So either this was a different Yeshua or a different Yeshua ben Parachia. One of them were the same. They couldn't be the same, the one we know on both sides of it.
Well, that's
about, I guess that would be a possibility. That would throw off a lot of other dates that we have. Again, it could be... Well, it could be the Christian Bible is not, you know, we don't have to accept it as any type of historical source. Although Josephus, well that's also interesting, because Josephus, who was a Jewish, you know, Jewish historian who fought initially against the Romans and eventually with the Romans, but he did write a history of the Jews, he does mention Yashka in the time frame that we normally associate him with. However, there's some evidence that at least some of that was a Christian interpolation into Josephus' work. So you can't even say Josephus directly said anything about it, because he writes things about a great man, a Mashiach, whatever it is. So he wrote things that a Jewish person would not write. And even Josephus, who surrendered to the Romans because he was, you know, somewhat cowardly, but he was not an apostate. He was a believing Jew, although. You know, we have a lot of criticisms of him. But anyway, the story that the Gemara recounts, and this has been censored, but some Gemaras put it back, is that Rav Yeshua ben Parachia and Yeshua came to an inn, and Rav Yeshua ben Parachia remarked, Kama noa ushpiza zu. How beautiful is this ushpiza? Now, ushpiza in Aramaic can either mean an inn or an innkeeper. So Rav Yeshua ben Parachia was commenting on the inn, and Yeshua remarked, I didn't like her eyes. Her eyes were too close together, which means he was assuming the conversation was about somebody's looks, which was very offensive to Rav Yeshua ben Parachia, that his Talmud would think that that's what he's talking about. So as a result, he put him in nidui, an excommunication, which required Yeshua to do tshuva and to come back and ask forgiveness. And Yeshua came for 40 days in a row. And Yeshua ben Parachia was fairly tough, and he was not mekabel. And finally, it was the last day, maybe it was the 40th day, and Yeshua ben Parachia said, okay, he suffered enough, he's ready to be mekabel. And Yeshua came exactly when Yeshua ben Parachia was in the middle of Kriya Shema, so he couldn't interrupt. Now, it's not clear if Yeshua notice this, but anyway, he basically said, this is it. I'm not accepting it anymore. So it says he renounced his connection to the Torah, and the way it's described is he went down to Egypt to learn incantations and sorcery, by which he was able to do various miracles. So actually, according to that passage, Chazal acknowledge that Yashka may have done whatever he did with the fish and whatever they say he did, except for Tchias HaMesim, but all the other things he may have done. But it specifically says that he had learned different techniques of Kishuv. But fascinatingly enough, the Gemara blamed Rav Yeshua ben Parachia because he says he was too tough. The Yamin should have been Makarev instead of the Yamin being Docha. So it's an amazing thing that we have that reference. This is a Gemara in a few places. It's Gemara in Saita, Gemara in Sanhedrin. But as I say, the standard Gemaras don't have the whole story. It was censored in the Middle Ages, and some Gemaras put it back, and some Gemaras didn't put it back.
Are we sure that the Chazal referred to the same Jesus?
No, not that's what I'm saying. A lot of it is uncertain. We're not sure if this is Jesus of Nazareth,
another Jesus,
or some other fellow. Yeah, Yeshua is a common name. Jesus just Yeshua. So we're not really sure. And the truth of the matter is,
There were a lot of
Josephus himself writes about, you know, in these generations there were just all sorts of pretenders who were claiming to be messianic figures and the like. So he was one of many. Okay. So anyway, I'm just mentioning that this idea of the chesed is the right and din is the left is used by Chazal as well. Now then he says, three lines from the bottom on page 130, V'zeh shenemar, and this is the meaning of what we say in every bracha on a mitzvah, asher kiddishanu b'mitzvosav, which means God has made us holy in his mitzvah. But look how the Baal HaTanya translates it. Ka'adam ha'mekadesh isha. Right, when a man marries a woman, literally we say he makadesh, he sanctifies the woman. What does that mean? Lios miyuchedes imo biyichud gomor. The kiddushin of a husband and a wife is to create a perfect and complete unity a unity of soul. God has married us in that way. Kamasha Kosev, by marriage it says, Davak b'yishto, right? Man shall cleave to his wife, for hayu l'basar echad, and they should become as one flesh. Now granted, Chazal say that in a physical sense, that's because, you know, they produce a child through their union, so literally, through the cleaving of husband and wife, you get one entity. But spiritually, it refers to the inner connection of the soul. So he says, Kacha mamish. This is exactly the Yetzer Al Kein, and more so, Liyein Kates, without even measure, Yichud Nefesh Elokis, Hosekes Beteru V'mitzvahs, V'nefesh Achiyunis, Ulevushayam Anal B'yorein Sof. So here he actually says, your point, the unification of the godly soul and even the animal soul gets united in the light of the infinite through the learning of Torah and mitzvahs.
So when it gets you, when the nefesh behemtit gets united, does it mean that the nefesh behemtit becomes a nefesh elokit or disappears?
He does say that this connection is sometimes temporary, so to speak. In other words, there's kind of a temporary suspension of its animalism, but it can then revert. But over time, if one sustains this level, it actually gets changed. And he says, Lachain Himshil Shlomo Alef Hashalom B'Shir HaShirim Yichud Zeh. And that is why Shlomo HaMelech, in the song Shir HaShirim, or the poem Shir HaShirim, compares this unity with God to the Yichud of Chasan V'Kala. Of course, I have to say, Shir HaShirim does not actually talk about them ever getting married. It doesn't use Chasan, he's man and woman, but be it as it may, it uses the imagery of the deep, passionate love that can exist between a man and a woman, because that is describing the yichud that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bideveka, cleaving, chashika. Chashika can mean either desire or it can mean hugging. V'chafetza, b'chibuk v'nisha. Yes, so chashika means desire. Chafetza, yearning. Chibuk, hugging. Nishuk, kissing. V'zeh, in fact, this is the thing that, if you ever saw the, I think they changed it in later editions, but if you ever saw the Art Scroll translation of Shir HaShirim, the Art Scroll translation of Shir HaShirim is not a literal translation, and they even have a footnote to explain. So because they say, since the literal translation of Shir HaShirim has so much sexual imagery, it is prone to be misunderstood as a romantic love song. So instead, we will not even give you a literal translation. We will give you the Midrashic translation. So, for example, when the Pasuk says, Yishakeni minishikos pihu, Yishakeni, may he kiss me from the kisses of his mouth. So they'll say something, I don't remember the exact Pasuk, but they'll say something like, when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, there were 10 plagues and many miracles. where it says, his wine is as sweet to me as, the greatest, something like, the Torah was a wonderful thing, in which they simply give you the historical event, and they said. So the question you could ask on the Art Scroll is this, let's assume they have a point that it's important to understand that Shir HaShirim is a parable. It is a metaphor for something deeper, and it's misleading to take it on a literal level. So the question you could ask is, why did Shlomo HaMelech make the mistake of writing it that way? Now, granted, we Americans don't know Hebrew, so our school can give us that. But if you're able to read Hebrew, you see that it's, So Shlomo HaMelech L'chara was as wise as the editorial board of the Art Scroll. So interestingly enough, Art Scroll gives a teretz to that too in a Hebrew letter they print from Rav Gifter. which they did not translate, actually. But in the Hebrew letter from Rav Gifter Zatzal, he says that it was very, very important that Shlomo HaMelech used the imagery of the passion that exists between man and woman, because the emes is, if a person is not capable of a deep love for another human being, they are not capable of loving God. And therefore, the concept is, Shir HaShirim is a mashal for something higher. But if you don't understand the nimshel, if you don't understand the literal, you cannot understand the figurative. You can't love Hashem in the abstract Because part of how we love Hashem is by connecting ourselves to Hashem's children and loving and seeing the goodness in others. In fact, the Vilna Gaon writes that true love of another human being is actually love of God, because what you love in a person are the qualities that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are in that person, their wisdom, their kindness, whatever it would be. Now, there is such a thing as infatuation. There is such a thing as lust. That could be called love in a debased way. But that's not really love. That's like what Lev Chassman used to say. He once saw a boy eating fish in the yeshiva very quickly. So he asked the boy, he says, why are you eating so quickly? So the boy says, I love fish. He says, so something that you love, you chew on, and you swallow and spit out the bones? That's how you show your love for the fish? If you love the fish, you put it in the aquarium. He says, you don't mean you love the fish, you mean you love yourself, and you're using the fish for your self-gratification. And his point was that sometimes when we talk about loving somebody, we mean it in that way, which is not love. But the Vilna Gaon says true love is an admiration. It's almost an aesthetic. It's an appreciation for the divinity that you see in another person. So Rav Gifter says, if you're not capable of perceiving that, you're not capable of loving Hashem. And that is why Shir HaShirim is a mashal which is required in order to reach the nimshal. And he says, this is the yichud that Hashem has with us. V'zeh shekasav asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav. So now he's moving it one step further. On one hand, it's a marriage, but it's also a sanctification. In other words, actually, he doesn't bring this. The Gemara has an expression by marriage, although it's interesting he doesn't bring it, that says, in other words, the halacha basically is that when a man marries a woman of a lower social station, his obligation of support has to be commensurate to his standard, meaning he can't claim, well, you're used to living poor, so I'll support you based on the way you were raised. No, she goes up with him. But the other way around, if he comes from a lower social station, unless she is mochelis, she can waive it, he is mechuyev somehow to support her in the manner to which she is accustomed. So part of kedushin is you rise with the husband. HaKadosh Baruch Hu marries us, we go up with him. That's the other idea of kedusha, that we definitionally become holy, because that is the halacha of ola imai v'eina yoredes imai. Do you want to say something?
I just wonder why the mashal of Shir HaShirim is actually when you say Shlomo HaMelech was depicting a romantic love between a husband and wife, and the nimshal was the relationship with Hashem.
Yep, that's right.
So, but I thought that the artful translation was always based on Rashi.
No, but you see that's not what Rashi means either. I mean, you see, it's impossible to say that a mashal is only a reflection of a nimshal because it is a mashal. I mean, a mashal has a story. It does have a story. Now, the story is teaching you something. What is the purpose of a mashal? The purpose of a mashal is to take truths that are abstract and maybe not so easily understandable, by giving us something that we can relate to because it's part of our normal experience. And then I think, oh gee, I know what love is, I feel it, I have it, so therefore I could try to imagine a little bit what divine love is. So to say that a mashal is irrelevant just generally is never the case. I mean, you have to look at it. Yeah, I mean, a mashal is worthy of note as well. Now, again, so the art scroll's point is, it's a point. Sometimes if a person gets over preoccupied with the details of a mashal, they're not going to bother to pursue the higher truths. They will distort. Okay, that's an issue. But the point is, if you only concentrate on the nimshal, you're also missing something as well. You're missing, as I say, compare the words that Shlomo HaMelech used with the translation that just makes it a historical listing of different events. So a mashal is significant. I mean, Shlomo HaMelech talks about, even in terms of the geography of Israel, he talks about the Karmei Ein Gedi, the vineyards of Ein Gedi, all those things. Hinach, right, he talks about the grass and the figs and the mountain goats. You know, if one doesn't have a sense of, in fact, most of us don't have that sense so much, if one doesn't have a sense of the geography of Eretz Israel, there's a tremendous amount that you're missing. I mean, there is. Why did he pick Ein Gedi? You know, why did he talk about this vineyard and that vineyard, this Samadar? So yes, it's a nimshel, but every single aspect of the mashal is there to give you a deeper meaning and appreciation. Okay, now then he says, the Kiddushanu also means, Helanu l'malas kaidesh ha'elyein. He brought us to the highest elevation of holiness, which is Kiddushasai shel ha'kadesh baruch. We partake of the holiness of God. And the holiness, Kiddusha, is a lashon havdalah. See, this is interesting. The term Kiddusha actually means to be separated, muftal. Now, that's why you actually find, paradoxically, that sometimes Kiddusha is used in a negative sense. Right? A woman that is a prostitute. A woman who it's a sacred prostitute. It's called a Kedesha. A Kedesha does not mean a holy woman, but it means a woman who is separated and designated to be available for promiscuity, an institutionalized promiscuity. Now, some have said this referred to various pagan rites, which the Greeks had as well, which involved a concept of a sacred prostitute. I mean, we don't consider that sacred, obviously, but it was part of a service in the temples of idolatry and the like. But if indeed Hashem is muvdal from everything on the earth, and that's why he's called Sovev Kol Almin, he encircles all the worlds. Ma she'eino yochel hislabish, he cannot be contained in the world. So he says, when I unite my soul in the light of the Ein Sof Baruch Hu, I achieve the level and the madrega of the Kedushas Ein Sof Mamish, because I now become included in that Ein Sof Baruch Hu. Again, I mean, you can see how powerful this is. Once again, the exact meaning does have to escape us here, because, these were some of the passages which got the Baal HaTanya in trouble, because it is basically saying, I mean, literally, just read the words very literally. He's saying, I become God, because my soul gets united with the Or Ein Sof. And therefore, I too am muvdol mikol ha'olamas, from all of the worlds, because I have become united in that infinite power, which the universe is located within, as opposed to this force being located in the universe. That's why Hashem is called Makom, because He is the location of the universe. The universe is not His location. He is Sovev Kol Almin, and he is not contained in any makam. Ki al yidei yichud hanefesh v'iskalalusa, by the unity of my soul and its inclusion in the light of the Ein Sof, harehi b'malas u'madregas kedushas Ein Sof, mamish, me'achar shemisyachedes, the soul is feminine, the soul is united, u'miskaleles bo, and is included, Yisbarach, for Hayu Liachodim Mamish. And this is what the Pasuk says. Again, a Pasuk. Vayisem li kidoshim, you will be holy for me, ki kadosh ani, because I am holy. For avdil eschem mina amim, I have separated you from the nations, lios li. And again, many Pesukim say this. Vayomer, vayasisem es kol mitzvosai, vayisem kidoshim leilai keichem, ani Hashem alokeichem. Perish, al yidei kiyum hamitzvos hareini eloka shelochem. In other words, right, it often says, keep the mitzvahs because I am the Lord your God. What does it mean to be your God? So he says a twist here. I will have a relationship with you. I will be your God just as I am the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So your name will now be added to that list. Now, what does that mean? The avos are bechinas merkava. Right? This is actually a statement in the Gemara itself. Ha'avos hein hein ha'merkava. Now, literally, that means the avos. Literally, that means they are the chariots of God. Meaning to say, they are the place in which God resides in the world. God moves through the world by being born by the message of the Avos. The Avos are, the, are that entity that enables God's presence to be perceived in the world. So he says, when a person keeps the mitzvahs with devotion, he becomes the Merkava for Hashem, which creates a unification with Hashem. Now the Avos, he says, were able to do this all the time. The Merkava, he says, is something that is nullified, right? The Merkava is just there to facilitate my transit. So it's nullified to me. And therefore, the Avos were nullified in the light of God. V'kacha hu b'chol nefesh mi Yisrael b'shas esek ha-tera v'amitzvahs. U'lachem chayvu razal lakum v'lamod ne'kol osek b'mitzvah. Now, this is, again, a fascinating rule. I wonder if Rav Soloveitchik got it. Let me share with you a thought. That, you know, it's a fairly recent minhag. Actually, it wasn't done that much when I was growing up. Maybe it was done before that. As you know, people now, everybody stands up now for a chasen and a kala. And everybody stands up. And although you'll often see some elder Rosh Yeshivas or older people do not stand up because they say, this wasn't the minhag. Bedavka. But if you ask people why we stand up for a chasen and a kala, so the reason that's almost always given is chasen is like a melech, chasen is like a king, the kala is like a malka, therefore we stand up for a king. Chasen is daim melech. The only problem is the chasen is not a melech till after the chuppah. Until the yersin, he doesn't have a din chasen yet. There's no din of amida there. If anything, we should stand up for the chasen when he's coming back from the chuppah. It's that, you know, whatever. But Rav Soloveitchik said that there's another marker for that mitzvah, for that standing. And he says there's a mitzvah to honor people. And the Baal Tanya mentions this, to honor people who are going to do a mitzvah. You honor a person that is holeich to do a mitzvah, and since the chasen and the chasen in particular is going to fulfill the mitzvah of kedushin, which the Rambam counts as one of the tayag mitzvahs in the Tariq, yikach yishisha. It's a machlekes actually, if kedushin is a mitzvah or it's only a hechsher mitzvah for pru or vu. But the Rambam counts it as a mitzvah, and the emes is we have a bracha, although it's a little bit of a strange bracha, but we do say Asher Kiddushanim Mitzvosav. Although once again, that's a bracha almost on a negative. He commanded us not to have, you know, arayas. It's a strange mitzvah. I mean, you don't make a bracha. He commanded us not to eat treif. I mean, you never make brachas on negative commandments. Okay, but be it as it may, Rav Soloveitchik says the chiyuv amida is because someone is going to do a mitzvah, and the makor for that. Where do you see a makor in Chazal that you should stand up when somebody's doing a mitzvah? It's from the Mishnah in Bikurim. Remember the Mishnah in Bikurim that many people learn on Shavuos describes how the different cities would bring their first fruits to Yerushalayim, and when they would enter, so all the workers who were blacksmiths, whatever it is, they would stand up, as then they would say Achechem Bo B'Shalom. And now, I'm not sure, again, I'm not really sure, I don't see a full consistency in all of this. I mean, for example, I don't see anyone, standing up when someone comes to show. I guess if we're all doing the mitzvah, it's the same thing, but whatever.
You're going to get an olinian, you don't see everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of mitzvahs people do that we don't automatically stand up when they're doing
it.
No, that's right. It was not. That's correct. That's actually a din. If the grandparents are going by an older person, you should stand up. Certainly, that they don't do. They keep the innovation, but not necessarily the actual halacha. But here, the Baal HaTanya makes reference to this halacha. Chazal were mechayev. They obligated lakum v'lamot to stand up and honor people who are about to do mitzvahs. Afim who bore the amoritz, even if the fellow who's doing the mitzvah is uneducated, and he's ignorant, he's not a Talmud Chacham, in other words. But what's the reason? Mipnei Hashem, Hashochein Mislabesh Benafshei Bishazu. If you go with the idea that when I do a mitzvah, I am entering an embrace with Hashem, and my soul becomes united, then when I'm doing the mitzvah, the Shekhinah is within me. And therefore, we have to stand to honor the Shekhinah that is present during that mitzvah. Ein nafsho margashas. Maybe the Am Haaretz doesn't feel that. He does not. He's doing whatever he's doing. You know, he does a mitzvah, he's doing a mitzvah. He may not have that elevated feeling. Mesa chachaymer, there's like a curtain of materialism. Hagufni, shalon isdachech, it has not been purified. Umachshech enei hanefesh, and therefore the eyes of the animal soul do not even perceive the presence of God. Unlike the avais, who had this presence of Hashem every moment of their lives.
Well, why do you stand up for somebody else doing this than stand up for yourself?
Well, you stand up for yourself too.
Why do you stand up the whole day?
Well, if you're doing mitzvahs the whole day. Yeah, I don't know. I don't fully understand this halakha either. I don't stand up when you make a bracha. Your kasha is not only a kasha on why don't I stand up when I make a bracha. It's equally a kasha, why don't I stand up when you make a bracha? I don't know. You have to be magdur a little bit. This needs a little more definition about what type of mitzvahs are we talking about. We don't see that there's a chiyav amida. I mean, the Baal HaTanya himself does not bring that I'm mechuyev to stand up every time somebody makes a bracha.
That manifests yichud, like kedusha, or something like that.
Well, I don't know, but what he said before is every mitzvah. I mean, he said before every mitzvah, you know, creates that yichud. Asher kiddushanu, certainly any mitzvah that you make a bracha, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav, is that idea of yichud. And Bikurim would fall. Because everybody is focusing on a central actor, as opposed to people. Yeah, I hear. Yeah, Bikurim is a public thing. Yeah. Okay. Now then he gives again an interesting interpretation of a pasuk. V'zeh she'amar Asaf. Right, Asaf was one of the Levim. Right, we have in Tehillim certain Mizmorim that are from Asaf, Bnei Korach, different people. So Asaf said with Ruach HaKodesh, and he was referring to all of Knesset Yisrael. There's a pasuk that says, "Ani bar v'layeda," I am foolish, and I am not aware. I don't know. Behemos, which is an unusual plural. Behemos ayisi imach, I am with you like a dumb animal. Although it says behemoth, which is plural, behemoth, v'ani tamid imach, and I am always with you. So the Baal HaTanya explains that what Asaf is saying, Asaf is describing the predicaments of the Jew in Gullus, which is not just physical Gullus, but the Gullus and imprisonment of the soul, that even though God is with me when I'm doing the mitzvahs, I am like a dumb animal who doesn't even realize it. I don't even realize the treasure that I have. Afal pi shani ke behema bi yosi imach. Even if I'm like a behema, I'm a boar. V'lo eida, v'lo argish. I don't know and I don't feel. Benafshi, in my soul, yichud zeh. I don't feel the connection. Shetipo lala imasa v'facha techila. Because if I felt the connection, he says, the first thing I would feel would be a tremendous fear and reverence. And then it would move into tremendous love and passion. That's what it would have happened. And he says, that's das. Das is hargasha benefesh. In other words, when we say, I don't know, meaning das is when you feel something in the depths of your neshama. When you don't have das, you don't have that hargasha. And therefore, afal pichei, ani tamid imach. I know that you're always with me. So this is what he says. He says, my physicality does not stop my nefesh elokis, from uniting with God. It may affect my awareness of that. So the chaimer affects awareness, but the chaimer does not affect mitzias. It does not affect the reality. It does not change the reality. It changes your ability to perceive that reality. And now he says, ubazeh, oh yeah, and that's the meaning of the pasuk, gam chayshech lo yachshech mimeka. The greatest darkness does not keep you out. By the way, you can see, by the way, as you read this, you can see that the emphasis of Hasidus, and in particular Chabad, in always looking for the pintle yid, that little point of goodness, I mean, it comes from these types of things, in which he says that that is that godly potential within a person. And that, he says, an interesting explanation, ubazeh yuvan chaymer einesh iser molacha b'shabaseis v'chametz b'pesach. We know that one of the most serious averos is to be mechalel Shabbos, or to eat chametz or have chametz on Pesach. And that shavah l'chol nefesh, those prohibitions apply to everybody, even the nefesh of a boor and an amoretz, gomor, meir or kedusha Shabbos v'yamtif, v'nidain b'nafshay b'kare suskila al chilol kedusha zo. So he says that even within the most lowly soul, there is a special kedusha in that soul on yamtif, Shabbos, and Pesach. So when he violates those laws, he is desecrating that godliness that is within him. So the crime, see, again, Kabbalistically what he's saying is, it's not simply I did something wrong. Rather, I violated a holiness that is within me. And no matter how lowly, so paradoxically, a boor could argue, well, I don't have that much holiness in me, so I didn't do that much, didn't do anything so bad. He says, no. No matter how lowly a person is, there is a special aura, a special light of Shabbos and Yom Tov that is burning within him. And when he desecrates and violates that, it is an awesome aver. It's an attack and spitting on that Shekhinah that is within him. Gam mashu chametz. And even a mashu, remember, chametz is very chomor, that even a even if it's a tiny little bit, even if it's less than one part in 60, or even moving muktzah, Muktzah are rabbinic laws, but it's rabbanan, but you're pogame. You're still affecting the holiness of the soul.
Is this related at all to
Well, yes, it would actually would be related. Because this explains, you know, explains on a mystical level, the idea of a shogeg. Because the emes is, it's very, very clear in the Torah itself that even inadvertent sins are considered to be sinful. Right? There are you have to bring korbanos. When do you bring a sin offering? I bring a sin offering when I violate Shabbos inadvertently. Shogeg, I thought it was Sunday, or I thought you're allowed to do a certain thing on Shabbos, and the like. Now the question becomes, well, gee, if something is an accident, what exactly is the sin? I mean, I didn't rebel against God. Now, one way of looking at it, which has a lot of support in Chazal, is that most cases of shogeg do involve negligence, they do involve carelessness, and therefore one has sinned because they didn't care enough. In other words, had they cared enough, they would have known it was Shabbos. However, that really doesn't work 100%. And the reason it doesn't work 100% is because the Gemara even has a category of a tinok shenishba. That's the Jewish child that was kidnapped as a baby, was raised as a goy. And the Gemara does conclude that even if he violated 100 Shabboses, when he finally finds out, he only has to bring one sin offering because he only had one sin. But the question is, he has to bring one. Why does he have to bring one? What did he do wrong? But Kabbalistically, it's a different issue. Kabbalistically, the idea is that a sin is not a crime only, but a sin is a desecration and a violation of a spiritual essence. It's like, you know, I mean, for example, let's take poison, for example. If I ingest poison, the poison does its job whether I intended to take it or not. In other words, there's no such argument. You can't make the argument in the emergency room, you know, I didn't know it was poison, so it shouldn't hurt me. It's a mitzias. Poison is going to hurt you. Now, we understand that in the physical world. The thing is, we don't understand that in the spiritual world, because we just look at sins as, you know, I did something wrong, and therefore, if it was an accident, you know, why should God be upset with me? But if you understand that these are realities that are pogame the nefesh, they actually desecrate and violate the soul, then in a sense, of course, Hashem's rachamim, etc. Hashem does not look at his shogeg like a mezid, but his shogeg is still a chet. And that's what he says. Even if a person's a boor, there's a tremendous...